Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Aptar second quarter conference call. At this time, all participant lines are in a listen-only mode to reduce background noise, but later we'll be holding a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance during the program today, feel free to dial star then zero at any time in order to speak with an operator, and I'll be happy to assist you. As a reminder, today's conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your first speaker for today, Matt DellaMaria, Vice President of Investor Relations. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you and welcome, everyone. Participating on the call today are Steve Hagge, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Bob Kuhn, Executive Vice President, Chief Financial Officer, and Secretary. Steve will begin our call with a brief overview of our quarterly performance. Bob will then discuss a few financial details and will open it up for questions. Information that will be discussed on today's call includes some forward-looking comments. Actual results or outcomes could differ from those projected or contained in the forward-looking statements. Please refer to Aptar Group's SEC filings to review factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected or contained in the forward-looking statements. We will post a replay of this conference call on our website, and Aptar Group undertakes no obligation to update the related forward-looking information. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Steve.
Thanks, Matt, and good morning, everyone. Before we comment on the quarterly results, I'd like to take a moment to briefly review the subject of my retirement that was announced a couple of weeks ago. As many of you know, I've been with Aptar Group for 35 years, and I'll be 65 at the end of this year. I'm in good health, and the timing is right for me to move on to the next phase of my life. It's been a tremendously exciting career, and it was not an easy decision to retire. I'm very thankful to be part of an excellent long-term performance of this organization. We have a very talented and experienced management team and an exceptionally dedicated global workforce. Following good governance practices, our board is conducting a review of both internal and external successor candidates. Because we must respect the board's responsibilities and the detailed nature of this process, we will not be commenting on potential successors or the timing related to any forthcoming announcements on this matter. I expect a smooth transition once a successor has been named by the board. I have no doubt that Aptar will continue to lead the industry in dispensing and sealing solutions for many years to come. I plan to continue to serve on our board, and I look forward to contributing to our future success. Now, turning to our quarterly performance. Yesterday, we reported second quarter sales growth of 4% and record quarterly net income and earnings per share. We continue to deliver value to our customers through innovative dispensing and sealing solutions and manufacturing excellence. We were able to achieve these strong results despite certain headwinds, including lower custom tooling sales, passing through lower resin cost, and softness in certain markets. In addition to record earnings per share, I'm pleased to report that we also expanded our adjusted EBITDA margin over the prior year. We continue to successfully integrate the recently acquired Mega Airless Company, and we're happy with the performance of the business. Now, as we anticipated, our Beauty and Home segment reported positive top-line core sales growth after several challenging quarters. This growth was primarily driven by increased sales to the beauty and home care markets that more than offset some continued softness in the personal care market. Demand from the beauty market was broad-based and across different applications such as fragrance, color cosmetics, and facial skin care, while sales of our insect repellent dispensers helped drive some of the growth in the home care market. We were happy to see a good level of project discussions and new product introductions in the quarter, including many global fragrance launches such as Lacoste, Michael Kors, and Hugo Boss. Our new applicator with adjustable side actuation and continuous formula dispensing was selected for a facial skincare product in Europe. In China, Aptar's all-plastic airless system is found on several new men's facial skincare products. And finally, Unilever has relaunched its Alberto Balsam shampoo in Europe to include a custom snap top for a more overall modern package design. Our pharma segment had another good quarter with increased core sales across each market. Sales to the prescription drug market increased over the prior year, even though last year's strong second quarter was a difficult comparison. Demand for our dispensing systems used with medicines for allergies was strong again in the quarter, and this included generic and over-the-counter treatments. Sales to the consumer health division increased due to improved sales to the eye care market with our innovative ophthalmic preservative-free system and increased demand for our nasal saline rinse spray systems. Our injectables business also grew over the prior year, and we continued to work with our customers to qualify the added capacity that has been installed earlier this year in Europe. And as we announced in the press release, we're pleased to be adding capacity at our Congers, New York facility to better serve our customers in the U.S. injectables market. Several new products were introduced in the quarter, including a generic allergy treatment using our nasal spray system. Also, two new dermal products were launched in the U.S. featuring our airless system, one for the topical treatment of acne and the second for the treatment of rosacea. Aptar's ophthalmic squeeze dispenser is also found on two new eye care products in Latin America. And we helped Abbott in Colombia launch a new pain management product featuring our versatile spray pump. This quarter was a bit more challenging for our food and beverage segment. This segment would have shown positive sales growth had it not been for decreased custom tooling sales and the negative effects of passing through lower resin costs to our customers. In addition, our food and beverage segment was negatively impacted by a decrease in demand from food and beverage customers in Asia. We do expect the continued softness in the Asian beverage market going into the third quarter. Despite the softness in Asia, we've been busy helping our customers introduce new products around the world, including several new bottled water launches in Latin America featuring our sports cap. In the U.S., Weight Watchers launched a new liquid concentrate water enhancer featuring our closure and Simply Squeeze valve. We partnered with Nestle in Canada on the Nestle liquid tea concentrate and also the development of a custom jar lid for the Nescafe Taster's Choice ground coffee. Our closures with Simply Squeeze valves can also be found on new barbecue sauces in Brazil and Mexico for both Hunt's and Heinz. Now, looking forward, I'm confident that our diversified business model will continue to drive future growth. We're serving eight different markets with a broad portfolio of dispensing and sealing solutions across many different geographies. Our level of project dialogue with our customers across each segment remains high, and we look forward to opportunities to bring new and existing Aptar innovations to the market. At this time, I'll turn it over to Bob, who will review some of the details behind our recent financial results.
Thank you, Steve, and good morning, everyone. I'll briefly cover a few details, and then we will turn it over for questions. In looking at how our business segments performed in the quarter, I'll start with our beauty and home segment. Reported sales increased 7%, and this includes Mega Airless for the full quarter, which accounted for 5% of the year-on-year growth, and reported growth also reflects a negative translation impact of 2% coming from changes in foreign currency exchange rates. Therefore, core sales increased 4% due to increased demand from the beauty and home care markets. When we look at profitability, our beauty and home segment achieved an EBITDA margin of 15.5% in the quarter. This was an improvement over the prior year margin of 14.4% due to the strength of the beauty and home care business and our continued focus on cost containment. Looking at sales growth by market on a constant currency basis, sales to the beauty market increased 21% on broad-based increases in demand across different application fields, and the inclusion of Mega Airless in our 2016 results. Mega Airless represented approximately 9% of the sales growth in the beauty market. Sales to the personal care market decreased 2%. and the positive effect of including Mega Airless, approximately 3%, was offset by an equal reduction in custom tooling sales compared to the prior year. And sales to the home care market increased 7% from the prior year, primarily due to increased sales of spray systems used with insect repellents. Our pharma segment had another good quarter with reported sales growth of 4% on broad-based increases in sales to each of the three markets served by this segment. Mega Airless represented 1% of the sales growth, and currency translation effects were not significant. Therefore, core sales increased 3%. EBITDA margin improved to 36% from 35% in the prior year. Looking at sales growth by market on a constant currency basis, sales to the prescription market increased 1%, and this included a negative impact from lower custom tooling sales of 4% compared to the prior year. Growth was driven primarily by strong demand for our nasal spray systems for allergy treatments. Sales to the consumer healthcare market increased 9%, and this is mostly due to the inclusion of Mega Airless, which contributed 6% of the sales growth. Excluding Mega Airless, sales to the consumer healthcare market grew 3% over the prior year on increased sales of our ophthalmic squeeze dispenser and nasal saline spray systems. And sales to the injection market increased 8%. Our food and beverage segment faced some headwinds in the quarter, and reported sales declined 3%. Changes in currency translation rates accounted for 2% of the decrease. Therefore, core sales declined 1%. The decrease in core sales is in part due to lower custom tooling sales and the negative effects of passing through lower resin costs to customers. Despite these headwinds, the segment achieved a strong EBITDA margin of just over 22%, which is a slight increase over the prior year. Looking at each market on a constant currency basis, sales to the food market increased 6% on increased sales to the dairy creamer, sour cream, and infant formula categories. And sales to the beverage market decreased 9%, primarily due to declines in sales to beverage customers in Asia. Also, lower custom tooling sales represented approximately 2% of the decrease. Capital expenditures were approximately $33 million in the quarter and equal to the prior year. Our free cash flow was approximately $41 million compared to $67 million a year ago. The primary reason for the decrease in free cash flow relates to changes in working capital. Looking at our balance sheet capitalization at quarter end, on a gross basis, debt to capital was approximately 41%, while on a net basis it was approximately 30%, and we are over 1x levered compared to our trailing 12 months EBITDA. We repurchased approximately 520,000 shares in the second quarter, and this brings the year-to-date repurchased share total to approximately 635,000 shares. I have a few comments on our guidance before we open it up to questions. As noted in our press release, we expect our earnings per share for the third quarter, excluding any potential impacts of the timing of cost incurred and any related insurance reimbursements associated with the Aptar Annecy facility fire, to be in the range of 79 cents to 84 cents per share. This compares to 83 cents reported in the prior year and to 81 cents if we adjust the prior year earnings per share to be on a comparable foreign currency basis. This guidance contains different assumptions, including the continued softness in the beverage market in Asia and a changing mix of business within our pharma segment. In addition, we are updating our previously disclosed projections regarding depreciation and amortization and capital expenditures, including the recently acquired Mega Airless business. For the full year 2016, we now expect depreciation and amortization to be approximately $155 million, and that our capital expenditures will be approximately equal to that amount. Lastly, we expect our effective tax rate for the remainder of the year to be in the range of 30% to 31%. At this time, Steve and I would be glad to answer any of your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions for the speakers at this time, you may dial star, then the number one key on your keypad. That's star, then one. If your question has been answered, or if you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question comes from a line of Ghansham Panjabi from Robert W. Baird. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Good morning. And, Steve, congrats on your announced retirement. We'll obviously miss working with you.
Thank you.
Hey, so first off, you know, understanding that comps were easy, you know, 2Q was still one of the strongest quarters in beauty and home in quite a while. Can you touch on mix for that segment? You know, just given your optimization program, I would have thought that the margin contributions would be higher. I think you mentioned tooling, but was there anything else in there that was unfavorable?
Well, you had a little bit of the resin pass-through that affected us. But again, I think we were seeing that we've had, as you said, some challenges in the segment over the last several quarters. We're good to, you know, we were very positive to see the growth. Again, our beauty market did very well. And certainly, as you've seen with some of our customers like Unilever, Procter & Gamble, talking about the personal care, they've seen a relatively soft market worldwide for those customers, and that had an impact. But overall, I think our performance, and then the other side, again, just to reiterate the home care market for insecticides was positive, and most of our growth there was coming from insecticide sales.
Okay. And then just on the comments on 3Q guidance, on I think you said, Bob, changing pharma demand. Can you elaborate on that? What does that refer to?
Yeah, I think if you looked at it, particularly over the last maybe year and a half, we've seen extremely strong RX sales, and the margins on a segment income basis have been, let's say, exceeding where even our targeted upper end of the range of between 30 and 31%. I think the positive what we're seeing is the diversity of our business is continuing to help us. We're going to see RX business last year in the third quarter was probably 12 to 14%. And now we're starting to see that more equalize, and we're seeing more growth in our elastomer business and our consumer healthcare, which has a bit of a different margin profile. So while we continue to be pretty strong in terms of growth, we think our margins will be closer to the upper end of our stated range than what they've been over the last couple quarters.
Okay, and just one final one on Congers. You know, it seems like demand for elastomers has been, you know, is expected to be quite strong going forward. Was there any consideration for a new plant in the U.S.? And at current, how much elastomer demand in the U.S. for you guys is being supplied locally versus maybe facilities outside the U.S.? Thanks so much.
Well, again, going back, almost all of our sales to North America, which is about $30 million or so, have been supplied from France. So, again, strategically, when we acquired Stelmi several years ago, we intended to build capacity first and then try to expand that capacity to other regions. And we've looked at Congers. What we've been able to do instead of building a full new facility, we'll be doing a finishing, washing of the products, et cetera. So I think we've been able to do it on a very cost-effective basis to really serve our North American customers. So, again, we're really – this is part of the long-term strategy we've had, and I think we're excited about being able to better serve our customers in the fast-growing North American market.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from a line of Adam Josephson from KeyBank. Your line is open.
Steve, Bob, good morning.
Good morning.
Steve, let me add my congratulations as well to you. Just one more, Bob or Steve, on the guidance. So you're, I think earnings were up 11% in 2Q, and you're guiding to essentially flat in 3Q, appreciating that you'd be slightly up on a constant currency basis, but you're talking only a percent or two. You mentioned the weakness in the Asian beverage market, Bob, but you also experienced that in the second quarter, and your earnings were still up by 11% year on year. So is it all, does it all have to do with RX, or I'm just trying to understand why earnings would go from up 11% to essentially flat?
Well, on the Asian beverage softness that we talked about in Q2, it primarily came in the month of June. So our guidance for Q3 is really based on what we experienced in June looking out forward. April and May, well, I would say, were more normal months for us in the beverage market. So that's why you see a larger impact in Q3 rather than what we had in Q2.
Bob, just how big is that business for you, just to give us some perspective?
Well, I mean, if you look for food and beverage, the overall split geographically for food and beverage, we got about 18% of the sales are made in Asia. And if you look at the broad-based split between food and beverage, we're about 59-41 food versus beverage. Our beverage market is slightly higher. Those percentages are somewhat flipped when we look at Asia.
Just a couple others, Bob. Any idea why what precipitated the weakness in June? You know, why June as opposed to, I don't know, a few months ago? Is there something that's obvious that would have changed in those markets in June?
Well, a couple of things. Let me take that one, Adam. I think we had two issues going on in the Asian market. One on the food side, one of our key customers, which normally does their plant shutdown in the first quarter, moved that to the second quarter. So we got impacted by that. That's actually back online, so we'll not have as big of impact in the third. But secondly, several of our beverage customers are seeing some softness in their demand. So as a result, they're actually pulling back a bit on inventory. So we continue to be optimistic about the long-term future in Asia, but we see this as more of a temporary blip. So, I mean, that occurred. So our discussions with the customers, they've started to see that more late second quarter, and they're being more cautious as they go into the third.
Thanks, Eva. Just two others. Just, Bob, on the seasonality of earnings, just so we have some perspective, typically how much should earnings go down by sequentially from 3Q to 4Q?
You know, it's not necessarily, 12 months. It depends on where we're coming out of a particular cycle, from an economic condition. I would say generally Q2 and Q3 are our stronger ones, but I'd hesitate to give, permanent, assertion that 3 should be closer to 2. I mean, we've had, going back, we've had variation depending on whether, we're coming out of a particular weakness or strength in any particular environment. But generally, 2 and 3 are our strongest. 4th is probably our weakest, and 1 is most impacted, really, from the recognition of the stock option expense. But that's about really all I would say for seasonality.
Thanks, Bob. And just Steve, one last one. I know you said you can't discuss the CEO search, but obviously when Peter's retirement was announced 5 years ago, you were named his successor after having been a COO for over 3 years at that time. This time around, your retirement was announced. There was no successor named. There was obviously no COO at the company during your tenure as CEO. So can you just help us with why there would have been differences, with Peter's tenure and yours as to why there would have been a COO under his watch and not yours?
Again, I think it was a different time frame. If you went back before that, we didn't have a COO before Peter. So I think it's been, difference where the business was. And again, I want to be, important here that the board is really coming back in terms of overall governance, feels that it's their obligation to review both internal and external candidates. And the timing of that is what they're going through now. So I wouldn't overread anything from where we've been in the past, but certainly the governance situations over the last 5 years have put more responsibilities to the board, and they're trying to reflect that in their decision.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of George Staphos from Bank of America. Your line is open.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. Thanks for the details.
Morning, George.
George.
Let me also congratulate you. It's been a pleasure working with you the last 20 years or so. And best of luck to you in the future and your Cardinals. I guess the first thing I wanted to ask about, just I know it's hard to predict this sort of thing in the past when there's been destocking. Yeah, it usually lasts about a quarter. What makes you comfortable that this Asian beverage situation is, that garden variety of blip, to use a term you use, why wouldn't it be something larger? And if you could provide a bit more color around that, that would be helpful to me anyway.
Well, George, again, what we're doing is kind of reiterating what the customers are telling us. So I think in China, the markets that we're serving, whether it's water or functional drinks, are seeing more challenges in the market from different competitors. So it depends on which customer we're dealing with. So right now, our customers are saying they think it's more of an inventory issue, but we'll get more color to that as we go through the third quarter, but that's all we have right now.
not to be pedantic about it, but why would there be so much inventorying of beverages in the first place, which I would think would be fairly fast-moving consumer good types of items?
I think it's just probably because of the length of distribution channels that you see in China. So once you've got it there, there's still a fair amount of product that you have to put to be able to cover the country. And, you know, several of our customers have to distribute these throughout the full, you know, the Asian market. So that's the only thing I can give you, George.
Okay. Fair enough. If we can switch gears a little bit, I'll ask a couple questions and I'll come back into queue. You know, can you talk a little bit about how Beauty and Home did in Brazil? If you mentioned it, I'd missed it. Has there been a pickup there? I seem to remember from the first quarter that there were some green shoots there. If you could comment, that'd be helpful.
Yeah, George, we were very strong in the second quarter in Latin America and primarily in Brazil. I mean, we were up almost 40%, slightly more than 40% in the quarter. Now, probably half of that, we estimate, is coming from volume, and half is related to catch-up of inflation and price increases. But you're right. I mean, the strength that we noted back in Q1 continued into Q2, so very positive sign in the second quarter for our beauty market. Also, Latin America, we also saw good growth really across all of our markets. Personal care was up, food and beverage was up, RX, CHC. So really Latin America was a strong performer for us. I mean, overall, on a consolidated basis, we were up about 33% in a quarter.
That's helpful. Thank you. Again, my last one, I'll turn it over for everybody else. You know, I seem to remember back last quarter, back to food and beverage here, that there were a number of projects that you were optimistic on. The tone of the business seemed to be strengthening. You know, and this question has been asked a couple different times already, but is there anything else that we need to be mindful of other than, you know, the China and the destocking, which will run its course in terms of why we're not seeing a better trend there? Thank you.
No, George, that's a good question. Frankly, I would tell you that I've been sitting through management meetings over the last 2 to 3 weeks, and we have significant amount of new projects. So we're continuing to be very excited about the number of things we're looking at and the potential projects we'll be adding. So I don't think there's been any change in sentiment. This seems to be more what we hope is a short-term issue. But again, we're very positive about the number of new projects, and we kind of reiterated that in kind of the press release. So still positive about the long-term future of the segment.
Okay, I'll turn it over. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Anojja Shah from BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning.
Morning, Anojja.
How are you? Congratulations again, Steve.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about the insecticide sales, and I think you guys had mentioned in 1Q that you had started to see an uptick and that you were expecting about 10 to 15 million of additional sales this year. Is that still the estimate? Is it higher now?
Yeah, I think that's probably 10. It's going to depend on really, frankly, what happens here in the United States, but that's kind of the run rate we've had. That 7% growth that we saw in home care through this quarter, the majority of that is related to the increase we're seeing in the insecticide side.
Okay. And going back to the strengths that you guys are seeing in Brazil and Latin America, I know you called out some things last quarter about exposure to specific customers that were doing well, but it just seems to me that beauty is a discretionary item, and in a country that's being, you know, that has a bad macroeconomic situation, I'm just surprised that the strength has been maintained for quite some time now. Do you want to just describe?
Well, I think, again, there's a couple issues. I mean, the beauty culture in Latin America and Brazil in particular is pretty strong. And I think what's happened is our customers, and again, I think everything has to be put in perspective, our customers last year were seeing challenges in that market. We were flat to even being down on the beauty market. They've become much more aggressive coming back and marketing their products. Certainly, as we're getting closer to the Olympics, there's been more promotions going on. So, I would tell you it is culture, and frankly, our customers went through about an 18-month period of slowdown in their sales, and they've been much more aggressive in marketing. But again, what I'd like to reiterate is what Bob said. This is really broad-based for us in Latin America, and that's coming from converting products. In our beverage business, and again, we put Mexico in our Latin American business, We're seeing, you know, continued expansion with Gatorade. We're seeing other products expanding. Where in effect, we're actually increasing from non-dispensing to dispensing, and the same goes into our pharma market. So today, it's been a very positive outlook for the whole region.
Yeah, that's very helpful. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from a line of Debbie Jones from Deutsche Bank. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
Congratulations, Steve. I just wanted to ask, I think you just took down your CapEx target by $10 million. I might be wrong about that, but can you just address that and against that you just, I think, announced the Congress project, and then also you discussed that you really like the pipeline of projects that you have going forward?
Debbie, I can take that one. So, you know, when we put together the CapEx guidance at the beginning of the year, we're working really, you know, off of a budgeted number. And at that time, we had out there the project for the Congers facility, even though we hadn't started. So the 10 really for our original guidance was already baked in there. The pullback from 165 to 155 was a couple things. One, little fine-tuning once we've gotten further into the mega integration process. We weren't quite sure until recently how much spend there was going to be before the end of the year. And secondly, it really reflects our cautious guidance in the Q3. So, I mean, as we've done in the past, we've been pretty good stewards of capital. When we see business slowing down, we look for areas where we can pull back, not only on general operating costs, but also in the capital area. So it reflects kind of both of those things.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. And then could you just talk a little bit about the fire that occurred and what happened? I mean, it doesn't happen too often, but this has happened in the past, and just kind of how to think about the impact in Q3. I know you addressed in your opening comments, but a little bit unclear to me how that's going to impact guidance.
Okay, I'd be glad to try to take that. This was a facility that does anodizing, that is basically coatings or transformation of color to metals. The facility is in France. There are three in the site. There are three production units, one of which is the one where the fire significantly destroyed. So, I'm very positive that no one got hurt in the facility, and we had no environmental issues around that. We've done an outstanding job, and I really congratulate the people that have been involved in this on our side, is making sure we have supply, because these are subcomponents that go into our products, to be able to continue to supply customers. And right now, we don't think we'll have a material impact on any of our customers as a result of this. The fire itself got started as a short in an electrical component. So you're right, we've had one of these several years ago, but we're, again, going back and reinforcing all of our fire safety protection systems on all our facilities worldwide. Overall, we don't think the impact is going to be, when you consider insurance side, et cetera, are going to be material to Aptar. But as we saw, even in any kind of you get into this, you can get cost in one period and reimbursement in another. And right now it's hard for us to estimate what that split could be.
Okay, that's helpful. And it, just real quick, can I ask what your resin assumption is in the Q3 guidance?
Yeah, right now we're seeing going, again, I'm going to go from second quarter to third quarter. We're seeing a slight drop both in Europe and the U.S., again, you got to take this in other parts of the world, it may be slightly different, but that is our biggest user. So it's a couple 2 to 3% down right now. But again, there's still quite a bit of volatility in those.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. I'll turn it over.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Chip Dillon from Vertical Research. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning, Steve and Bob. Well, my first question is, or actually my first statement is, Steve, congratulations. And also, I think it's fascinating. Most managements never achieve an upward goal. Seems like you've never seen the pharma margins get sort of down to what you kind of always fear they might get to. So congratulations on that. Speaking of that segment, I had a quick question. I know that when Bob went through the numbers, he mentioned, you know, the prescription growth, the consumer growth, but there was one number that was up 8%, and I just don't recall what that was.
That was in the injection side, so we were up 8% in a quarter on our injectable business.
Gotcha, okay. And then I think, Steve, you mentioned that pharma margins are likely to average higher in the back half and the first half. If you could clarify that and say what's going to contribute to that performance.
No, I think what I was meant to, I mean, I'm, you know, maybe I misspoke on this, Chip. What I'm saying is, as you've said, our margins for pharma have been outside of our normal range for the last several quarters, due in part to very strong RX sales that have been double-digit for the last several quarters. What we do is, and I think this is a real strength of our pharma business being in both prescription, consumer care, healthcare, as well as injectables, while we're still seeing growth, we're now seeing that growth among both in consumer healthcare and injectables, which carry a bit of a lower margin profile. So I think we will be coming down from being over our estimates to being more on the high end of our long-term targets.
Gotcha, that's clear. And then I think as we, next question is, as we look at the food and beverage segment, and I know it's really early days, but is there any thought to maybe, or may I put it this way, if the weakness you're seeing in Asia persists, say, for 6 or 9 months, would there be the potential to do any kind of footprint realignment in that region, in that business, or would that just be too early of a reaction?
I think it'd be too early of a reaction, and again, I want to reiterate, we're still very positive about the Asia growth platform for us, and I can tell you, Chip, one of the things that we've been looking at is the need to potentially expand in Asia. Today, we are in several different facilities, and we're looking at whether to, you know, should we be expanding in Guangzhou. So I'd say it's more of a growth look for us than a contraction, but certainly we'll end up monitoring where we're going to be on the food and beverage side over the next, you know, 6 to 12 months.
Okay, one last quick one. You mentioned the lower CapEx for the year. At least we had 165 in our model. What would next year directionally look like versus this year? It's kind of early days, but do you have an early read on that?
No, I mean, we're just now, Chip, starting to get into that process. It's really going to be very much project dependent. I mean, at this point, I don't foresee any major bricks and mortar or anything like that other than, you know, potential expansion that Steve just alluded to there. But I would say we'd probably be where, you know, in the ballpark of where we are today, 165. But I really would have to see some of the details, which we won't be getting now for a couple months yet.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Chris Manuel from Wells Fargo. Your line is open.
Good morning, gentlemen. And Steve, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Best wishes on retirement. The only question actually I want to ask one along these lines, and I know you're trying to avoid some questions around this, but I think you kind of gave a relatively hard stop of towards your end retiring. Is it anticipation, though, of having someone else in place before you retire?
Well, again, I think what I'm going to be doing, I've told the board this, I will be flexible in terms of making sure that there's a smooth transition. And I think the board is diligently working to try to find the successor, again, either from an internal or an external candidate side. So there, I'll have some flexibility. It's not a hard stop necessarily at year end.
Okay, that's helpful. Just having interims or different things in between can sometimes be disruptive.
Yeah, from my perspective, that's not something that it makes a lot of sense for the company or for me.
Okay, thank you. With respect to the, you know, kind of Stelmi and then Conger's addition and stuff as well, it sounds like you're getting closer. You're doing some trials and customer qualifications. When do you anticipate commercial shipments going? And if memory serves, what you did in over in Normandy was to kind of expand capacity roughly 40%. How much would the, you know, sort of washing, cleaning, or prep facility in North America be able to, you know, absorb if you wanted to ship product here? Could it cover most of that, or you know, kind of give us a sense as to how significant the North American add will be?
Well, let me come back and take two parts that. First of all, you're right. We've ended up coming back. Our new operations have been expanded in France. The mixing machine is in, and we're going through the qualifications. We actually are expecting to ship commercial product out of that starting in the third quarter, ramping up to the fourth. What we'll be doing in North America will effectively adding about 10 to 15% of potential capacity. But I think it's our most important side is it's going to really improve the service, the quality, et cetera, for what is a potentially significant U.S. what is a significant U.S. market. So for us, it's a growth platform. So we'll probably be able to get another 10 to 15% in terms of potential sales out of that, you know, out of the addition and that we should be done with the construction of that in Congers towards the end of this year and then qualifying customers as we go into next year.
Okay, that's helpful. One last maybe thing I'm a little confused with here. You know, Steve, you mentioned that you feel best about your prospects that you have in a good while, that you're seeing, you know, lots and lots of development and heavy activity across customers. But, Bob, when you mentioned, you know, kind of whenever you start to see slowness or different elements in your business and you start to see any kind of pullbacks or changes, you reassess, and that's kind of what led you to low end of the CapEx. Kind of hearing those two side by side, they don't necessarily sound consistent. Maybe I'm misinterpreting something, or how would you want us to think about that?
I mean, on the CapEx, it's more, I mean, as we get into the year, we're able to better fine-tune what are the immediate CapEx needs. I mean, I think Steve's comments are much more medium to longer-term focused, and the CapEx I was focusing really on the next 6 months. So, I mean, you know, what we're putting in CapEx in the next 6 months is not necessarily where, you know, the growth that Steve's alluding to is really investments that we've made in the past and current project activity.
Yeah, and I'd reiterate to that, I think, Chris, we've never not invested when we see good growth projects, and that will continue to be, you know, the company's profile going forward.
All right, that's helpful. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Looks like we have a follow-up from George Staphos from Bank of America. Your line is back open.
Hi, thanks for taking my follow-up. And perhaps, well, let me back up a bit. Brexit, have you seen any change in buying behavior from your customers since Brexit? At all, would you relate what you're seeing in Asia to Brexit, or is it totally unrelated in terms of, you know, the macro concern, the second derivative issue?
Let me come back and deal with the second. Certainly, what we're seeing in Asia is completely disconnected from the Brexit side. So that's more of a local market issue. In general, for us with Brexit, and I think this is true for most of the companies that I've had a chance to talk to, if you look at our profile, we actually have a relatively, while we have manufacturing in the UK, it tends to be relatively small. So the devaluation of the pound, the media side, didn't have a material impact for us. What I think Brexit is doing in the short term is probably not causing much disruption, but what it is doing is putting a certain amount of uncertainty in the marketplace. So I wouldn't tell you it is necessarily helpful, but in the short term, we don't see any major material negative.
Okay. Thanks for that, Steve. And, you know, Zika, what sort of additional benefit might you see from this above and beyond the run rate that's been witnessed already? Are you seeing any kind of fall off in duty free? I wouldn't imagine there's that much duty free related to the regions that are being affected by this, unfortunately, but can you comment to that effect, the puts and takes relative to Zika?
You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see as we get into the Olympics if you start to see travel downturn. Certainly, as you know, Bob alluded to when he talked about market, we're actually seeing pretty strong growth throughout Latin America. So we don't think that the Zika virus per se has got a lot of negatives. What I do think you're going to get is that there wasn't much insecticide used in Latin America in prior years. We think that's probably going to be a trend that's going to continue now that they are using it, and they're going to need to continue that. So I look back to this as like the hand sanitizer issues when we had the avian flu. All of a sudden you have a base that moves up from a level of, let's say, 100 to 115 that stays there. So I do think, you know, insecticide sprays will continue to be maybe not the same growth we have this year, but won't go back to where they were in the past.
Thanks, Steve. I guess my last question, maybe you'll cover this in September when you do your analyst day. You know, periodically we all ask you the same question, perhaps in different ways. You know, from my vantage point covering the industry, I haven't had a company that's put up the same high level of consistent growth as Aptar, you know, again, in my time covering a stock. That being said, you know, it seems more frequent as an occurrence that Aptar has a one-off issue here, a one-off issue there, and you're really not hitting your core growth rates longer term across all of your segments. And again, if you have a very high comparison to go up against. Do you think at this juncture that maybe it's time to rethink the longer-term growth rate, Steve? What would you lead us to believe at this juncture? Thank you.
It's a good question, George, and it's one that we're going to continue to follow up, and we'll talk a little bit more about it at Analyst Day. I think, though, that one of the things you bring up is a real big strength of Aptar's, and that's the diversity of the business. So you've not seen just one market being up or down. We've seen volatility, and using that in a positive term, between the various markets. So we are going to be taking a look at it across where our growth targets are. But I think, again, the diversity of our business is a strength to be able to help drive not only growth, but also the margin profile that we've seen improve across all three of the business segments over the last year to year and a half.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Good luck in the quarter, and we'll see you in September, Steve.
Thanks a lot.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a brief reminder, you can queue up for a question with star then one on your keypad. If your question has been answered or if you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Looks like we have a follow-up from Adam Josephson from KeyBank. Your line is open.
Thanks, guys. Steve, just two follow-ups. One on the destocking issue. Just, if memory serves, you've had a few of these occurrences in recent years. Can you just give us some perspective as to how long these have typically lasted?
You know, they've gone, it'll depend on, it's a good question, Adam, but it depend on kind of the segment that it's in. Because we've seen some destocking in pharma. We saw a little bit in beauty and home a couple years ago. So typically for us, they tend to be 1 to 2 quarters would be the impact. But again, everything's going to be dependent on the region and the particular customer.
Sure. Thanks, Stephen. Just one related to George's question about the core sales growth target. You know, you're falling short of that target. Conversely, you've been above your year-to-date, you're above your long-term margin target. Can you just give us your thoughts as to why that these things would be happening, that you'd be above your long-term margin target and below your long-term sales target? And do you think it's reasonable to expect that to continue? And if so, why?
I mean, one explanation, and if you look at it, is just pure mathematics. I mean, if you look at the size of the beauty and home segment, which is where we've fallen short of the sales target, that is our lowest margin. So the slowness that we've experienced the last 18 months in the beauty and home also has a positive influence on the mix of the margin as pharma and food and beverage have grown. So I think the converse is true as well, and that's, I think, one of the positives coming out of the Q2 is we're starting to see, you know, beauty and home come back to within the range of their long-term sales growth. So I think part of that is just pure math when you do it.
Well, I think the other thing, and going back, and I'll take a little bit on top of what Bob has said, I think we've done an excellent job as a company taking a look at our cost controls over the last, and this is across all three segments. We've done a very good job of doing that. That's helped. Certainly, the other thing, as I wouldn't underestimate, has been resin, and let's call it raw materials on a broad base. Raw materials, you saw a margin improvement last year. Now, certainly, you don't have the year-on-year improvements because raw materials have not been a material part this year, but that's also helped us. So going forward, I don't see, we're not expecting a major deterioration in the margin profile. And, you know, while we're at some of those margin targets for a couple of the segments, at least in beauty and home, we still got a ways to go to be able to get there. And I'm still pretty optimistic that we're going to be able to get to that.
Thanks a lot, Steve, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a follow-up from Chris Manuel from Wells Fargo. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys. This is actually Gabe. A three-part question first and then another one. With respect to Stelmi, just a point of clarification, the 10 to 15% expansion that you talked about in capacity, Steve, I think you talked about it being a $30 million business. So should we think about that as $3 to $5 million sort of revenue opportunity? And then I think to build on Chris's question, how much of that new capacity that you added in France is going to be taken up by the new opportunity in Congers? And then, you know, even further, does this take away sort of from any prospects of expanding in other regions? Or have you guys identified any other bottlenecks with respect to Stelmi?
Let me go back and try to see if I can deal with each of those. on the 10 to 15%, I think it's more 10 to 15% of overall STELMI, because this is one piece of kind of the whole manufacturing process. So it is bigger than just the U.S. side. It's more of, it adds capability. And frankly, when we're up and running in the States, while we're going to be dedicating most of that capacity to the U.S., there's nothing that would say we couldn't ship that to other parts of the world. Secondly, in terms of, you know, in terms of the new production going on in France for Congers, this will be just an additional piece of, you know, dedicating that new growth. And I think that's the key side. We're seeing 8 to 9% growth in our injectable market. You know, looking back, this is a way to help facilitate that growth. So, again, some of that will be end up using for Congers. Some will be used for the rest of the world. And lastly, I actually think what we're doing in Congers in terms of breaking down some of our business actually makes entry into other areas of the world much more economic. I've been building a whole new production facility. So I think this is an excellent strategic move in terms of our overall growth and really helps us as we go for the next five plus years.
Very helpful. The last one, any early wins that you can talk about from sort of the cross-pollination from Meg Aralis?
Yeah, again, what I'm going to do is I think we've got a couple on the personal care side. One I want to touch on, I actually touched upon in my remarks. We're seeing on the dermal side, because we talk pharma as a growth area for us, and we've got two new projects, one for acne, one for a red skin condition that has come back, and both of those are using Mega products, and both of those are end up coming out of the prescription side. So certainly Mega was working on those, but our regulatory knowledge really helped them get across the finish line. And we're also seeing some really interesting opportunities in Asia and also going into Latin America on future projects using that, you know, the airless technology.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a follow-up from Chip Dillon from Vertical Research. Your line is open.
Yes. Hi. Just a quick one on the buyback. You gave us an update on the buyback activity. What do you have left on it? And, you know, you mentioned your level of leverage. Is there any thought toward, toward increasing whatever the pace of buybacks is or possibly doing some kind of a Dutch auction just in the low leverage right now?
If we've got about $37.5 million from memory's sake left on the existing authorization. So, you know, we'll look at that with the board at future board meetings as we do each time on whether we're going to go for another extended authorization. And then after that, we'll evaluate the situation where we're at. Certainly the share price where it is today, we'll have to take that into consideration, whether we look at an ASR or a Dutch auction or whether we just do open market transactions. But, I mean, we're committed to the consistent capital allocation approach, so it's something we evaluate on a regular basis.
I see. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, one more call for questions. Star then one will place you into the queue. I'm seeing no other questioners in the queue at this time, so I'd like to turn the call back over to management for closing remarks.
Great, Andrew. Thank you. This concludes our call today, and I'd like to thank everyone for joining us.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for your participation in today's conference. This now concludes the program, and you may all disconnect at this time. Everyone have a great day.